Back together, you and I, for a midweek Wednesday, March 9th edition of Connecticut Today, right here on WICC 600 AM, 107.3 FM, or online at WICC600.com. I wondered out loud about the political optics, quote-unquote, of bonuses for state employees coming in an election year. Gasoline and oil analyst Mike Fox joined us again to talk about the immediate future for local gasoline prices. And Republican State Senator Paul Ciccarella, who represents the 34th Senate District, checked in on the latest public safety hearing that went on at the state capitol. Now, let's get underway with this. In the media business, we have a phrase that we often use, and maybe you use it in your business, your line of work, what you or your wife or your husband or your kids do or your significant other. Do you ever hear the phrase, perception is reality? Do you ever hear that? And it's pretty much self-explanatory. It doesn't need, you know, some sort of a Rhodes Scholarship to figure this one out. The perception of people is a reality. In other words, it may not necessarily be the real reality, but what they perceive a certain situation to be is, in their minds, the reality. When, if you step away from it 10 feet away and look around and say, well, no, because you're wrong, because that's not it. But to the person, to the people, to the man, to the woman, to the child, whatever, perception becomes, you know, reality. And I bring that up because something, I guess, a little controversial has happened here, maybe, with word that has broken over the past day or so. We gave you an update on this late yesterday. But now there are more details coming out about the recently negotiated contract issues between Governor Ned Lamont, his staff, and the State Employees Union. Now, let me say something right up front, because I want to get this out of the way before we delve deeper into this. And I have our Facebook question of the day lined up on this as well. I'm a firm believer, as somebody who has been on the receiving end of many job offers over my years, doing this and doing a little bit of newspaper and a little bit of television and other stuff. A person, if they want to, can take any offer that's given to them, right? How many times through our lives, in our employment histories, have we gotten an offer from somebody who said, well, really? I mean, I want the job, but God, that's crap money. Really? And then every so often, maybe if you're lucky, you get, wow, it's pretty good. That's more money than I thought I was going to get. Or you get a little bump from your employer, and that old phrase of, you know, not looking a gift horse in the mouth, you know, which comes from the equine science of, you can tell how healthy a horse is by looking at his or her mouth and the teeth and everything. So, in other words, if somebody's giving you something that you didn't have to cry and grovel for, you take it. So, having said that, I don't besmirch any employee, private sector or public sector, state, town, whatever, federal, whatever. If the state or town or the federal government is making you an equitable offer for employment and you like the terms, then you vote to take it, right? It's not too difficult. But sometimes things are done, sometimes, where you look at it as somebody footing the bill, the taxpayers footing the bill. So you look at who's footing the bill, if you're footing the bill, and you look at the timing of everything, right? Again, perception is reality, the timing into this and all. And it turns out, according to at least one report here in the Connecticut Mirror, that in the new tentative, and we don't have the details on this yet, and all these contracts have to become, of course, public record, the General Assembly has to go over them. It turns out, though, that Connecticut state workers, and again, I don't besmirch them for taking the money, because, listen, if somebody offers you the money, of course I would take it. I'm not going to lie to you here. Now, the part that, you know, bothers me a little of this is the timing and what it is. In an election year, yes, we have a gubernatorial election coming up in November, along with mainly state House and state Senate, of course, in the federal years. But in an election year in which we are electing either Governor Ned Lamont to serve out another term or electing whomever his Republican opponent may be, likely Mr. Stefanowski, but that's not formally said yet. In an election year, we see that state workers are going to get a $3,500 bonus on top of their new contracts that were negotiated with the state. Says here in this story by Keith Fanouf in the Connecticut Mirror, more than 40,000 unionized state employees would receive $3,500 each in special bonuses by mid-July under tentative contract agreements reached this week with the governor's administration. That is according to a document that was obtained by the Mirror. So I think the Connecticut Mirror is the only publication rolling with this right now. I don't see too many specifics in other publications. Now, look, we knew there was going to be a new contract deal coming up. We knew that there was going to be a controversy as to how many state workers were going to retire before July 1st. If you waited on July 1 or after, the benefits were reduced. So, you know, that's not really, controversial here. But everybody's got, well, not everybody, but a lot of people are kind of raising their eyebrows. Really? Your $3,500 bonus payment in an election year. Perception is reality. Let's go back to my initial thought here. Perception is reality. Is the governor buying votes here? I'll ask you right out. I don't know. Is he? Is the governor buying votes here? Now, you may say, Paul, well, no, he's just offering a bonus, or there was a negotiated bonus with CBAC representing all the state employee unions. Okay, you can say that. But it's an election year. And there are a bit over 40,000 unionized state employees. What was Ned Lamont's margin of victory over Bob Stefanowski 4 years ago? 44,000, thereabouts, 44 and change. I don't have the exact figure in front of me, but I don't know. Again, kids, I'll ask you, what do you think? Perception is reality. Is it or is it not? Is it fair to at least consider whether or not this is bad timing? Does this just look, I don't know, a little greasy? Now, maybe to some of you it doesn't. To some of you, like, no. And again, the supporters of the state unions already saying, well, you know, they were foregoing increases. There were some givebacks. I get that. That's the argument all the time. But what do you think here? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. What do you think here? Honestly, is this bad optics? You know what I mean? Is this dangerously close? It may not be. I'm sure if you ask Governor Lamont, say, Governor, are you buying votes? He's going to say no. Of course he is. Nobody's going to admit this. But giving out union bonuses in an election year of $3,500 each, again, I'm not besmirching any state employees' job performance. That's not me. I'm just looking at the numbers here. And again, the perception. Do we have another case of perception is reality here? Now, who knows about the mechanics of this? Were these bonuses broached by the governor first? Were they broached by CBAC? If you were the governor, would you have preferred him say, now again, we don't know if this is completely accurate, but all reports are pointing that way. Would you have preferred that the governor said, well, it's an election year, guys. You want me to give you bonuses in election year? That's not right. Maybe we should wait till next year or the year after, you know, to be structured in this contract. Now, a lot of you would say, yeah, but if they know the money's coming, that wouldn't have made a big deal. Well, maybe, okay. But again, my point, perception is reality. What do you think? 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. Reports say more than 40,000 unionized state employees are going to get $3,500 bonuses by mid-July in an election year. You okay with that? Or does that, to you, resemble a little too much? Is that a little too close to vote buying in an election year? And by the way, that's our Facebook question of the day. Do you think it's proper for Governor Lamont to give state employees $3,500 bonuses in an election year when there's no real effort to cut the gasoline tax or to cut the sales tax or to cut the $1 surcharge on eat-in meals? Yet a key voting bloc that is staunchly votes Democrat in the state is going to get a nice bonus, $3,500 ahead by the time the election rolls around. All right, as we mentioned early today, the highest gas prices we're seeing in the area, according to Gas Buddy, $4.59, $4.60, $4.48. There was one or two $5 plus stations in Upper Fairfield County. It may be different where you are. So the big question is, how bad will it get? How long will that take? Our buddy Mike Fox joins us. He heads GASDA, the Gasoline and Auto Service Dealers of America, located in Fairfield County. Mike's been on this program and this station numerous times in the past. Mike, it's Paul here. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
I'm all right, Mike. We could all be better here, and I'm sure you're keeping a close eye on this. Let's start out right up front, Mike. I see the climb now is starting. Some stations edging in the upper $4 range, $5. Mike, is there any way in your mind to project how expensive this could get?
Not really, other than what we term an educated industry guess. And what I mean by that is I look at where the current production levels are, where inventory levels are, and I look at those as signs of whether prices will continue to climb, level off, or decline. Unfortunately, I see nothing in those two examples that I gave you that is going to stop the rise of gasoline prices. I have said as much as a month ago, I do believe, and I hate to say this, we're going to hit $6, $7 a gallon.
Why? What is the Mike, along with cutting off the Russian flow here, which some people, I've seen figures as low as 3 or 4%. I've seen 7, 8, or 9%. So A, cutting your available stock, I understand, is one thing. What else would drive that price hike?
This really isn't that hard if you take the word politics out of it. Simply put, what President Biden did when he came in office through his executive order was stop production of U.S. domestic crude oil. At the time he did that, we produced more crude oil here in the United States than we needed for demand. Simply, the amount of crude oil exceeded the demand for gasoline. That is a recipe for declining prices. Whenever you have more of something than people want or need, prices go down. Whenever you have less of something people want or need, prices go up. The president, I truly hate to say this, the president went on national TV and lied. He said that production today in the United States is higher today than it was for the last 2 years. You just need to Google EIA.com, Energy Industry Administration.com, a federal government agency. The numbers there say the president lied. Now, he may know something that I don't, but then we would question, why is a government agency putting out one set of numbers but telling our president another? And the numbers don't lie. He's clearly out there saying there are many, many leases that they're not drilling on. Well, he's not telling the American public the whole story. Leases are one part of the process. Now you have to get a permit. Just like what we saw with the Keystone XL pipeline, one day a permit is granted, the next day the permit is taken away, and your billions of dollars have evaporated. That's just happened way too many times. The oil companies know it, and I certainly hate defending oil companies, but that's really what's going on here.
Yeah, Mike, I saw that yesterday, and I saw that EIA site popping up on a lot of my feeds, and I was looking at the numbers, and it was interesting. Mike, hang on. We'll be with you for more. Mike Fox is the guest, a longtime guest here on WICC, heads the Fairfield County-based Gasoline and Auto Service Dealers of America. Let's do traffic and weather together. Back with more on gas and oil prices. Mike Fox, straight ahead on WICC. WICC 600 AM, 107.3 FM. And online at WICC600.com. Open phone straight ahead. Few more minutes here with our buddy, our pal, longtime guest here on WICC for years, Mike Fox, the head of the Fairfield County-based Gasoline and Automotive Service Dealers of America. So, Mike, we're hearing what you're saying, and I have a lot of analysts and experts on the show, and you heard what the president said, and it's being debated and rebuffed by you, and there's also, I don't know whether you saw it, Mike, there's a big piece in the Wall Street Journal today doing that exact same thing that you mentioned. But everybody, you know, points a finger at the oil companies and production and this, so If you're in the boardroom, Mike, or on the board of directors or whatever, what are the head honchos you think, Mike, of the oil companies, you know, thinking right now? What could they do? You know, I know that increasing production is not that easy sometimes, and it affects their profit, which affects their shareholder returns. So what do you think the burden is, Mike Fox, on the oil companies right now?
Oh, I would not want to be an oil company executive today, except for, of course, the salary that they get. But the problem that you have is you have to remember, when you're the CEO of any public corporation, you have a fiduciary responsibility to your shareholders. You don't have a fiduciary responsibility to you and me, the consumer. You only have a fiduciary responsibility to the shareholder. Now, I also understand that they're not only protecting the shareholder, but they actually are protecting us because they're out there producing what they can produce within the guidelines that the federal government allows them to produce it. It is crystal clear that the president does not want to undo his executive order because he knows it'll have the opposite effect, and politically, he loses that argument. So when we talk about who is really working for the American people, and I'm not Democrat, I'm not Republican, I'm for what's right, what works, or what's wrong. And here's what I can tell you. Only under President Trump did we become energy independent for the first time. It's not because he's a Republican. It's because of what he did. He changed the rules and the regulations for production. He allowed the Keystone Pipeline. He approved it. He understood it. It drove the Green New Deal people absolutely crazy. And this is the thing that frustrates me. People have to understand something. Go out and buy an electric car today, if you can find one, and wait till you get your electric bill for filling up your electric car. Electric rates went from 6.5 cents a kilowatt to 14 cents a kilowatt currently. That's up 100%. So just fossil fuel is the mechanism which the power plants use to create that power that creates the electricity. So this is all about making cars and gas so expensive that people say, I'm just going to buy electric. And then you're going to find out that that didn't work either. I'm here to tell you the truth. There are finally starting to come out industry studies and industry reports on what's more efficient, an electric vehicle or a gas-powered vehicle. There are also reports coming out showing that electric vehicles are not 100% emission-free. They are not green. What comes out of their tailpipe is green, but produce and operate the car is not green. Charging the car is not green. And I just have one question for all the green people, because no one wants dirty air. God knows our industry has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars cleaning up underground storage tank leaks, putting in stage two vapor recovery to catch the fumes when you're fueling up your car. Mm-hmm. We've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars. We care about the environment. What we also care about is a fair chance to sell to the American consumer. And that's not being done right now. Politics is rearing its ugly head, and consumers are being forced to do something that they obviously do not want to do. And we need to get on the telephone, and we need to start telling our representatives in Connecticut, I have nothing but good things to say about Senator Blumenthal, especially when he was AG in Connecticut. He helped us fight the fight against those big oil companies. Right now, going out there and saying he supports an 18-cent suspension of the federal gas tax, I've already told his office, that's a joke. One, federal government doesn't have the money. Two, the federal government just gave the state of Connecticut in COVID relief funds $6 billion, with a B. Money is in the bank for road and bridge repair. Normally, that comes from our state gas tax. You want to do something that works for Connecticut consumers? Suspend the gas tax and that hidden tax, the gross receipts tax. You're looking at a 50-cent reduction the minute it's put in place. And I'll say it on your radio station. Our members will support the law saying we have to pass on every penny of those tax decreases onto the consumer. We did it before, and it worked. It's temporary, but it does give the consumer relief. And that's what's important.
The website, GASDA, GASDA.org, Mike Fox. Mike, as always, good stuff. It makes us think. We thank you. Take care. And we'll talk to you down the road, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, there you go. Mike Fox from GASDA. Agree, disagree, whatever. There you go. Joining us right now to talk about what went on in Hartford today and all the public safety concerns and issues that are being tackled this time around by legislators is Republican State Senator from the 34th District, Paul Ciccarelli, is with us. Hey, Paul, it's Paul here at WICC. How are you?
I'm well, Paul, and thank you for having me.
Well, great to have you on, Paul. Well, a lot of activity today. I know there was a hearing of the Judiciary Committee. First of all, I know that lawmakers heard today, and it's a tragic thing that goes on here, Paul, from the two Bridgeport families who recounted that they did not get immediate confirmation of the deaths of two women in their families. And I know there's a bill now, Paul, pending to put that notification requirement in law in the state. What was their testimony like?
It was quite sad. It was a lot to take in. It was an emotional testimony from the families for good reason. They lost loved ones and weren't updated in a reasonable amount of time, to say the least. And it was quite emotional to hear their testimony. But, you know, as they went on and explained what happened, you know, I don't want to say it's an isolated incident, but this happened in Bridgeport. And all too often when something happens in a profession, and lately it seems to be just law enforcement, and there's an isolated issue, all too often all individuals within the profession kind of get that same bad publicity. Mm-hmm. And as terrible and horrific as those incidents were, and in one incident, two lives were lost in one day, and both had very similar situations occur where the families were not notified for quite some time, and that's unacceptable. But as the testimony went on, you know, this only happened, from what we understand, in Bridgeport, and I just think we should fix that problem. And if legislation is the way to do that, I support that. But we didn't hear of this happening in other municipalities, towns, or cities.
All right, that's good. Paul, hang on. We'll come right back with you. Quick break. I want to talk and get into a little bit about some of the proposals I know that the Republican caucus has made, and now there may be some overtures that some centrist Democrats may warm up to in an election year. State Senator Paul Ciccarelli is with us. We'll get back to him first, though. Once again, check traffic and weather together for you on the 6s at 4:36 on WICC. And we continue here a few more minutes with Republican State Senator Paul Ciccarelli, 34th District, portions of East Haven, North Haven, and Wallingford. There was a public hearing today, Judiciary Committee, talking about some, you know, public safety proposals and things in that ilk. And we should mention that Paul does have a background in law enforcement, serving as a corrections officer with the Connecticut State Department of Corrections, which is not an easy thing. So, Paul, some of the other issues brought up today, I know that there's been discussions now between the two caucuses up there regarding pro-law enforcement things, maybe recognizing that some areas of crime in Connecticut are not dropping, as some people say, or in equal amounts. There are still some other areas that we need to work on. Did you sense any momentum on any sort of issues on that today?
There's a lot that's going on. Matter of fact, I'm still on a Zoom hearing in public. The appropriations. As you can tell, we have a lot of Zooms today.
Yeah.
But the judiciary public hearing is still going on. There were 76 individuals set up to speak, and they're going quite long. And from being on it since 10 o'clock this morning, we're hearing a lot from the public, and that's really what our job is: listen to what the public has to say. And we're hearing both sides, and the real give and take and compromise needs to come from the legislators. And unfortunately, we really need to, after listening to this public testimony, get together and as a committee have hard conversations on how we could address what's happening right now. And I just think anybody that has common sense would see that, the police accountability bill that was brought forward or came into place, a year ago, year and a half ago, is definitely causing a lot of the issues that we're facing here in Connecticut. There's just no doubt about it. Unfortunately, officers are being reactive instead of proactive. And there's a lot of legislation that clearly shows that. We were talking about not being able to officers not being able to stop somebody for a broken taillight or simple infractions like no license plates visible or tinted windows or things of that nature. If we're not stopping the vehicles, you're not finding people that are possibly intoxicated, right? You're not getting the guns and drugs off the street. And even if you were able to stop them for one of those second rate, if they're calling that, and that's what they're calling it, second rate offense.
Yeah.
You're not able to search the car anyway. So even if you have a reasonable suspicion that something may be going on, and you say, "Hey, can I search? If you have nothing to hide, can I search the vehicle?" And even if the person has nothing to hide, they can't do that.
Yeah, that's and Paul, people should understand that. These aren't forced searches, correct? So in other words, if an officer there says, "Can I search your car?" and this is called a consent search, right? And if the person pulled over says, "Sure, officer, go right ahead, I'll wait over here," that's not even allowed, right?
Not allowed. Nope. Absolutely not allowed. Even with the permission, it is not allowed.
The issue with juveniles. Paul, unfortunately, we had another case the other day. You may have seen it. The 64-year-old woman who was doing door-to-door delivery service for one of the major services. She was carjacked, traumatic brain injury. The person arrested for it and charged was publicly named because he just turned 18, but apparently Paul had a criminal record as a juvenile, the prosecutor is saying, and there were two juveniles with him. Again, Paul, it's mind-boggling to me, and you must wonder this too, having served in the corrections department, Paul, I don't understand what the hesitancy is here to get a little tougher with juveniles. We don't want to throw somebody in jail for stealing a candy bar, or throwing a rock through a window. But again, this seems to be, Paul, and correct me if I'm wrong, this seems to be one of those points that there just doesn't seem to be enough give and take on. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
You're absolutely right. And we talk about give and take, and I completely understand that somebody that makes a mistake as a juvenile or even in their 20s, somebody makes a mistake, it should not be a life sentence. It should not be, a life-altering event for somebody. Somebody is with the wrong crew, or they make a mistake. It's not the plan to throw them in jail, and I get behind that. But when somebody is committing crimes and violent crimes, sometimes in the same day, and you don't take action, that's just mind-boggling. All we're doing is promoting the violence, promoting the crime. And if we're not helping the juveniles, especially, seek proper guidance, counseling, mentorship, punishment, when they turn 18, what do you expect them to do? Just stop? If anything, we're creating a better criminal. They're getting practice from 14 to 18. And I know that the way I say that, it's terrible, but that's exactly what we're doing. Without accountability for one's actions, why would they stop?
And Paul,
they're not going to stop at 18.
And I'm guessing, Paul, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm guessing when you were working in the corrections department as a corrections officer, I would think that maybe you saw inmates that you were dealing with, that maybe you said, hey, if somebody had gotten to this guy or this gal maybe earlier in their life after they did two or three bad things, with a better mode of rehab, this person wouldn't be talking to me today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, good people make poor decisions and sometimes put them in these bad situations and sometimes even prison, and that's terrible. But, you know, I think my experience as a correction officer in law enforcement gives me an interesting perspective. But to that point, I think my current profession, I own an investigative and consulting company, and we do a lot of litigation support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we help attorneys. And one of the biggest things we do is criminal defense. And all too often, we see individuals that make a mistake. I had a case in New Haven 4 or 5 years ago. Individual, I think he may have been 19 years old, still had his whole life ahead of him, just happened to be at the wrong place, the wrong time. And this person now is going to spend pretty much the majority of their life in prison. You know, that's terrible. And I feel for the individuals that get caught up in those situations, and they should be addressed individually. But all too often, that's not the case. The majority of the people that are in prisons continue to make mistakes. It's very hard to go to prison. You really have to get in trouble quite often. You get put on probation unless you do something very bad. This mm-hmm. is even years ago. You know, it's not easy to get put in prison. So normally there's multiple offenses that would put somebody in prison unless it was, you know, a bar fight, and God forbid somebody gets extremely injured or passes, you know, and it's like, oh, that, you know, the poor guy got into one fight and now he's in prison for 10 years for manslaughter.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like that. It's repeat offender, repeat theft, repeat drug use, repeat fighting, repeat offenders that get put into these positions. And you could tell by the inmate number when somebody was incarcerated, because you keep your inmate number for the mm-hmm. duration of your life.
Yeah.
And you'll see individuals that are just coming in with inmate numbers that go back years.
Wow.
And you know, that's a very, very big problem that we have.
Wow. Paul, thank you. State Senator Paul Ciccarella, Republican, 34th District. Paul, enjoy the rest of the public hearings, and I'm sure it'll be interesting to hear more about what people are saying on both sides of this and a bunch of other issues. Paul, we appreciate the time and a busy day. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. If you're listening, just go to Safer CT and see some of our plans to make a safer Connecticut. It'd be really great. And there's a petition to sign and get involved and promote a safer CT.
All right. We'll check it out. Paul, thank you. We'll go over that website straight ahead. Paul, thanks. Be good.